أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. سورة الضحى نمبر 93. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. والضحى والليل إذا سجى ما ودعك ربك وما قلى وللآخرة خير لك من الأولى ولسوف يؤتيك ربك فترضى. By the morning brightness, by the night when it is cold, your Lord has neither forsaken you, nor is he displeased with you, and the hereafter shall be better for you than the world. Soon your Lord will give you that with which you will be pleased. This surah and the surah following it, Surah Al-Insharah, have the same theme, and one may think that it's a continuous source of theme which is interrupted by Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim in between, because if you have a look at the end of this surah, it says وَأَمَّا السَّائِلَ فَلَا تَنْهَرْ وَأَمَّا بِنِعْمَةِ رَبِّكَ فَحَدِّثْ, and then it continues with the previous theme which was in this surah. أَلَمْ يَجِدْكَ يَتِيمًا فَآوَى وَوَجَدَكَ ضَالًّا فَهَدَى وَوَجَدَكَ عَائِلًا فَأَغْنَى. In the next surah it says أَلَمْ نَشْرَحْ لَكَ صَدْرَكَ وَوَضَعْنَا عَنْكَ وِزْرَكَ الَّذِي أَنْقَضَ ظَهْرَكَ. So the theme is very similar. And as I said, it seems to be a continuation of the previous surah. That is why the majority of Shia jurists have said that reciting one of these verses is Salat is not enough after Surah Al-Hamd to be regarded as a complete surah. So these two surahs, if you want to recite one of them in your wajib Salat, you have to continue to the next surah with, of course, the Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim in between. So they say Surah al-Duha and Surah al-Insharah are regarded as one surah when it is recited in Salah as the surah after Fatihah al-Kitab. The similar decree is about Surah al-Fil and the surah after it, which is Surah Ilaq, Ilaq Quraysh, because there the theme in the next surah is actually a continuation of the theme in Surah Al-Fil, because it says أَلَمْ تَرَ كَيْفَ فَعَلَ رَبُّكَ بَأَصْحَابِ الْفِيلِ, and in the following surah it says Ilaq Quraysh, this we did for the comfort of Quraysh. Anyhow, whether the surah is Makki or Madani is of disputes. It could be both of them, but the Asbab al-Nuzul, the causes of revelation, mostly are mentioned about when the Prophet, peace be on him, was in Mecca rather than in Medina, unless one of them, which may be in Medina as well. Now, the surah talks about something very strange, and that is a feeling in the Prophet, peace be on him, that Allah has forsaken him or is angry with him. Because it says, وَالْضُحَى وَاللَّيْلِ إِذَا سَجَى, I swear by the morning brightness, I swear by the night that your Lord has not forsaken you, nor is he displeased or angry with you. So it shows that there was this sense or feeling in the Prophet, peace be on him, that Allah has forsaken him, and even more than that, he was angry with him. Now, to understand why this feeling was created in the Prophet, peace be on him, we have to certainly look into the causes of revelation. Different things are mentioned about the cause for revelation of this surah, which some of them is related to later years, some of them are related to very early years of the Prophet's mission. Now, one of them, which is mentioned by Muslim and Bukhari in both Sahih books, is that Prophet became ill for a couple of days, and therefore he did not come out of his house to invite people to Islam. And a lady from among Mushrikun, which in other traditions we have that he was Ummu Jamil. Ummu Jamil was the wife of Abu Lahab, about whom a verse is revealed in the Quran. Of course, a negative verse rather than a positive verse, because when the Surah Tabbat was revealed, Ummu Jamil was also mentioned in that Surah, because it says that Tabbat yada Abi Lahabin wa tab, may the hands of Abu Lahab be cut off, ma aghna anhu maluhu wa ma katab, and then it says, wa mra'atuhu hammalat al hatab, and his wife is bringing fuel for this fitna, which Abu Lahab was creating. So Ummu Jamil is somehow mentioned in the Quran. Now, the tradition says that after the Prophet could not go out of his house for a couple of days to invite people, Ummu Jamil went to visit him. And he, of course, was ill, and Ummu Jamil told that, in a sense that she insinuated that I've come to visit you because you are ill, but she said that I see that your shaitan is not coming to reveal things to you a couple of days. And then Prophet became very upset of what Ummu Jamil said, and therefore these surahs were revealed. It's very strange if we think that the cause of this revelation is this incident. If the incident is true, if it had taken place, it would be very strange, because just by something which Ummu Jamil has said, Prophet feeling that Allah has forsaken him and feeling that Allah is angry with him, is of course not probable. Therefore, we discard this as cause of revelation for this surah. The other one, which is mentioned by Wahidi in Asbab al-Nuzul, you know, the most famous book written in Asbab al-Nuzul is by a scholar called Wahidi, which lived in the 4th century. It is hadith of Hafs ibn Maysara. He says that he is the grandson of Khawla, who was a servant of the Prophet, as it is mentioned. And he says that, reports from his grandmother, that the revelation ceased to come to the Prophet for a few days. And Prophet was very upset, very frustrated that why did not revelation came to him. And therefore, one day he said to Khawla, what is happening, what is going on in my house that Jibreel does not come to me? And Khawla said, I will look around to see if there is anything unusual. So she cleaned all the house and she found a small puppy who had died under Prophet's bed. And it had been there, as the hadith says, for a few days, and then it had died there. And after probably a week or a couple of weeks, they found the puppy's body there. And after they removed it, Jibreel came to the Prophet and he said to him that when Prophet asked him, why did you not come to me? He said that, do you not know that we would not enter a house in which there is a dog or there is a surah? A surah may mean an idol, certainly. So a house in which there is dog or there is an idol. Again, this is very strange to accept, difficult to accept, because first of all, Prophet did not used to be in his house all the time. Most of the time he was in his mosque, and Jibreel, even if we say that it's true that the angel would not enter a house in which there is a dog, Jibreel could have come to him in the mosque, while he was outside, while he was dealing with other things, while he was, if this is in Mecca, in Masjid al-Haram, if this is in Medina, in his own mosque. So again, it is a strange type of thing.
So the best option would be to relate this to the incident of Surah Al-Kahf, where, of course, you know the story, all of you know the story, that when the Prophet told to Mushrikun that I will inform you when I receive revelation, without stipulating that provided Allah sends me revelation, without saying inshallah, the revelation was stopped, which of course frustrated the Prophet very much. Now the story, for those of you who don't know, of course it's a very famous story. The Mushrikun, after trying so hard to dissuade Prophet, peace be on him, to stop his invitation and his call, they thought that we better go and consult Ahlul Kitab, especially the Jews. They said, we are illiterate people in terms of course, the divine books. And they know better than we do. So we better go and consult them to see what to say to this man, because he believes or he claims that his mission is continuation of the mission of previous prophets. Apparently there were two incidents when they consulted Ahlul Kitab. Once they went to Medina for consultation, and the other time when they were doing their business to Yemen, they went to Najran, which was in Yemen. And you know the Christians of Najran, because Najran was a multi-faith city. Christians, Jews and idolaters, they all lived together in Najran. Apart from Christians, there were Jews as well in Najran. They went and asked the Jews in Najran, you please advise us what to do with this man. He claims that he is a prophet. Now the Jews of Najran told them that we have in our books the news or the information about a man who will come in your area as a prophet, but of course he may be an imposter, so ask him three questions. If he can answer these questions, then he is a prophet and you should follow him. If he does not answer, you should know that he is an imposter. He is posing himself as the prophet who is going to come in this vicinity, in your vicinity. And the questions were about a group of people who ran away from their own people, and they tried to hide in a cave, and they went into sleep, and after a while they came back to life, Ashab al-Kahf. And the second thing was about the companion of Musa alayhi salam, who was he? And the third was about Dhul-Gharnayn. All the three stories are mentioned in Surah Al-Kahf. So these businessmen came back from Yemen and they posed the questions to the Prophet, peace be on him, and Prophet told them that I have no knowledge myself, I have to receive revelation, inshallah. Tomorrow I will inform you when I receive revelation. Apparently Prophet was assuming that the revelation will come. And the course of events happened in a way that revelation did not come. Now some people like Ibn Juraij say for 12 days it was cut off. Ibn Abbas says for 15 days. Qatada says for 40 days. So from 2 weeks to 1.5 months almost, they say that the revelation was cut off. And of course you would imagine the psychological situation of Muslims at that time, that now the Prophet is defeated by these questions, he cannot answer, and he says that the revelation is cut off. It was a very bad situation for Muslims. And therefore this feeling came to the Prophet that Allah has forsaken him. And most worriedly, he had been angry with him. Qala. Qala means to be angry. So the feeling was there until Jibreel came and recited these verses to the Prophet. There are three or four instances of verses in the Quran which may be related to this incident. One is in Surah Maryam. When Jibreel came to the Prophet after the stoppage of revelation, Prophet told him, "Ya Habibi, I was very eager to meet you. Why didn't you come?" And Jibreel said, "You cannot believe I was more eager to meet you. I am always more eager to meet you than you are eager to meet me. However, I cannot come unless with the leave and permission of God." And this is the verse which is in Surah Maryam. وَمَا نَتَنَزَّلُ إِلَّا بِأَمْرَ رَبِّكَ لَهُ مَا بَيْنَ أَيْدِينَا وَمَا خَلْفَنَا وَمَا بَيْنَ ذَلِكَ وَمَا كَانَ رَبُّكَ نَسِيًّا. You cannot come without permission of your Lord. Whatever we have in past, future, present belongs to Him. And you should know that your God is not forgetful. Of course, Prophet knows that his God is not forgetful. Just as an illustration for us, that God is not forgetful. If, for example, something don't come, if you ask something from Lord and He does not respond, it doesn't mean that He has forgotten or forsaken you. There are lots of hikmah here. So this is one verse which is related. وَمَا نَتَنَزَّلُ إِلَّا بِأَمْرِ رَبِّكَ لَهُ مَا بَيْنَ أَيْدِينَا وَمَا خَلْفَنَا وَمَا بَيْنَ ذَلِكَ وَمَا كَانَ رَبُّكَ نَسِيًّا. The other one is this one, which says, وَالضُّحَى وَاللَّيْلِ إِذَا سَجَى, by the morning brightness and by the night when it is calm, مَا وَدَّعَكَ رَبُّكَ, your Lord has not forsaken you. وَمَا قَلَى, and He is not angry. The third verse which is related to this incident is the very verse in Surah Kahf itself. وَلَا تَقُولَنَّ لِشَيْءٍ إِنِّي فَاعِلٌ ذَلِكَ غَدًا إِلَّا أَنْ يَشَاءَ اللَّهُ. Never say, "I will do something tomorrow," unless you stipulate, you have in mind that if God wills. You should not assume. Of course, Prophet did not do anything wrong here, because the revelation was coming day by day to him. So he just said, "Tomorrow I will inform you," as was the habit of Jibreel coming every day and bringing news and information and revelation to the Prophet, peace be on him. So he assumed that this is going to happen, and Allah is actually warning us sometimes, and warning the dearest people to him that do not assume things. Now, the one point that we have to bear in mind always, Allah is very tough with those whom He loves. If you don't say inshallah, or if you assume things, Allah will continue, if we do that, will continue with His boundaries. But if someone like the Prophet does it, Allah is very tough. And this means that He is very concerned about those people. Let me give you an example. We did Surah Tawbah. Here the explanation of Surah Tawbah. Many people did not accompany the Prophet to Tabuk. They were munafiqun, there were people with weak faith and all these things. And all of them, after the Prophet came back, the hypocrites, these people with ill hearts, they came to the Prophet and said, "Ya Rasulallah, forgive us, ask forgiveness for us." And Prophet did. Whoever came to them and said, "Ya Rasulallah, do istighfar for us," Prophet said, I do istighfar for you. Ya Allah, اغفر لهذا. He did to everyone. Although Allah said, استغفر لهم أو لا تستغفر لهم. إن تستغفر لهم سبعين مرة فلن يغفر الله لهم. Rest you assured, whether you ask forgiveness for them or you do not ask forgiveness for them, Allah is going to forgive. But Prophet did it out of his generous nature. However, a couple of people who were good believers and did not go with the Prophet, who were mu'minun, who had good heart towards the Prophet, but they did not go with the Prophet. Prophet, when they came to speak to him, Prophet turned his face from them. He was very upset, very angry, did not speak to them. And then they thought, "What should we do? and Prophet ordered everyone else in Medina not to talk to them. And they were completely isolated. They thought that there is no way for them unless if they leave Medina and they live alone, stay in their houses. There were three people. وَعَلَى الثَّلَاثَةَ الَّذِينَ خُلِّفُوا About those three who were left behind. And two of them were old. One of them was Ibn Amr, the other two were a bit older. And the two older guys, they stayed at home and cried from the morning to the evening. And even after a couple of weeks, Prophet asked, summoned their wives and told them, you should not stay with them. And you leave them as well. So it became very hard. وَعَلَى الثَّلَاثَةِ الَّذِينَ خُلَّفُوا حَتَّى إِذَا ضَاقَتْ عَلَيْهِمُ الْأَرْضُ بِمَا رَحُبَتْ وَضَاقَتْ عَلَيْهِمْ أَنفُسُهُمْ They thought that tightness, that difficulty in themselves, in their house, outside. So until وَظَنُّوا أَلَّا مَلْجَأَ مِنَ اللَّهِ إِلَّا إِلَيْهِ They thought that they only have to direct their hearts to God and ask Allah for help. And they did. And they were forgiven. And the verse was revealed to the Prophet, and the Prophet was very happy, informed them, received them. Now, why did the Prophet do this to these true believers and had completely different treatment and behavior with others? Because he was concerned about these three. He wanted them to be forgiven. He wanted them to do something so that Allah forgives them. Others, because Allah did not forgive them anyway. So Prophet was not concerned about it. So, the closer you go to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the harder and tougher he will become with you. Be careful. If you want to go close to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, be careful. Because then Allah will become somehow choosy about things, will treat you differently, and that is why it is said in Hadith, أَشَدُّ النَّاسِ بَلَاءً الْأَنْبِيَاءِ ثُمَّ الْأَوْلِيَاءِ Those who are most tested by Allah, most tried by Allah are the Prophets, then there are awliya, ثُمَّ الْأَقْرَبُ وَالْأَقْرَبُ then those who are closer to them. Anyhow, the incident in Surah Kahf caused this concern in the Prophet that Allah was angry with him, and Allah here says, no, certainly I have not forsaken you. The very fact that I stopped Jibreel coming to you, the very fact that I treated you in this way means that I have not forsaken you, means that I am concerned about you, and means that I am not angry with you. So, وَالْضُحَى وَاللَّيْلِ إِذَا سَجَى By the morning gradual, Zuha is the rays of sun when it is spread. So the spread of the rays of sun is called Zuha. Therefore, it is usually meant morning brightness. However, it is used for the whole day as well. Part of the day, which is the most significant symbol of the day, is used for the whole day. And Layla Iza Saja, night when it is cold, it means when people, when creatures are called, that means when night somehow goes ahead, becoming very dark, and all the animals, human beings, they rest down, they calm down, they are quiet. So Sajr usually means quietness and calmness. Bahrun Saj means a quiet sea, without any surf or anything like that. So by the night when it calls means that by the night when it goes a bit further, deeper into the night, and all animals, everything rests down. And that's why Laylun Saj means a very dark night, because usually when night goes deeper, it becomes darker and darker. Now, some exegetes have tried to relate this to the attitude of the Prophet. That Allah is saying that, look, night and day are not equal. things are not always in the same state. We have night, we have day. We have happy days, we have unhappy days. We have hard times, you have times of comfort. And also, you have times when you receive revelation, and you have times when you do not receive revelation. So, do not worry about these changes. These changes is a part of life. And Maybudi in his Tafsir, Kashf al-Asrar, says that night is hijab, is the veil, when it comes to the heart of Waliullah, and day is Kashf al-Hijab, is unveiling. And with regards to the Prophet, it will be when the Jibra'il brings the revelation and when the revelation is stopped. مَا وَدَّعَكَ رَبُّكَ وَمَا عَلَى Your Lord has neither forsaken you, nor is He displeased with you. Now, before going into that, usually the exegetes are very fond of relating very general concepts to very particular ones. And here as well, they have tried to say, Zuha, by Zuha, Allah doesn't mean generally morning brightness or day. He means a particular morning brightness or a particular day. And by night as well, He means a particular night. Because swearing about night generally has no significance, or about day generally. Therefore, for example, they said, well, Zuha, what is that Zuha? Now, in the story of Musa, we have that when Pharaoh said, let's make an appointment for encounter between us and you, between the magicians and you, Musa said, قَالَ مَوْعَدُكُمْ يَوْمُ الزِّينَةِ The day of Eid. They had the day of Eid, which they call it يوم الزينة, the day of ornaments, or adornment. قَالَ مَوْعِدُكُمْ يَوْمُ الزِّينَةِ وَأَنْ يُحْشَرَ النَّاسُ ضُحَى And we gather the people in the broad daylight, in Zuha, in the beginning of the day, and we have encounter, that encounter against each other. And some exegetes say, that Zuha is what is meant here. Was Zuha by that Zuha in which Musa and his, and the magicians encountered each other. Right, there is no reason why should we accept this. It's just a sort of a tasty understanding. An understanding which is more related to a personal taste rather than a general understanding of the Quran. Now what about the layl? They say, well, which night is better than Laylat al-Mi'raj? So it means, and by the night of Mi'raj. Well, you know that Mi'raj may have taken place at different times, so chronologically this might be possible, but again, from the perspective of interpretation, there is no reason for this. Now, your God has not forsaken you. This is what probably the mushrikun will say, that Allah has forsaken His prophets. In a mocking way, trying to ridicule him, that his God has forsaken him, revelation does not come to him anymore, and he is not angry with you, is to do with the prophet's feeling, that, have I done something that revelation does not come? Have I done something wrong with Jibreel, doesn't bring me revelation? However, what is mentioned is that all these things happen. Sometimes revelation comes, sometimes it doesn't come, sometimes you are in hardship, sometimes you are in comfort. However, you should know that at the end, the success belongs to you. وَلَا الْآخِرَةُ خَيْرٌ لَكَ مِنَ الْأُولَى The end will be better than the beginning. Now, the end may mean hereafter, as it's translated here, the hereafter is better for you than this world, or it may mean the end of your mission is better than its beginning. We know the beginning of the mission was not a very rosy situation. Oh, tortures and hardships and problems and fightings. However, at the end, what happened was the establishment of Islam, the establishment of, even during the lifetime of the Prophet, Islam had established itself completely in the peninsula, and all the Arabs came to Bedouins came to swear allegiance to the Prophet. And therefore, the end of the mission was much better than the beginning of the mission. This is one understanding. The other one is the hereafter is better. And it goes better with the following verse. وَلَسَوْفَ يُؤْتِيكَ رَبُّكَ فَتَرْضَى. And your Lord soon will give you that with which you will be pleased. Now, let me mention something from Maybody first. Maybody, you know, the 6th century is a very special century for Shia tafsir. We have 3 very major tafsir written in the 6th century. One is Majmu' al-Bayan, which is very, very important. And the other one is Kashf al-Asrar, وَأُدَّسُ الْأَبْرَارِ by Maybudi in Persian. And the other one is the very beautiful tafsir by one of the greatest exegetes of the time. The name slipped my mind now. But 3 major tafsir were written in the 6th century. And this Maybudi is one of those mufassirun who has somehow blended his tafsir with refined understanding. Now, one of the things that he mentions, of course, we should not think that we have to accept these things, but these are a sort of delicate understanding of some of the verses. He says that there's a difference between Musa and our Prophet, and between our Prophet and all other Prophets. Now, he says that, look at this verse. He says, لَسَوْفَ يُعْطِيكَ رَبُّكَ فَتَرْضَى. Your Lord will give you soon so much that you will be pleased. Now, about Musa, we have in Surah Taha, قَالَ وَمَا أَعْجَلَكَ عَنْ قَوْمِكَ يَا مُوسَى. Why did you rush and came before your people, Musa? قَالَ هُمْ أُولَاءِ عَلَىٰ أَثَرِي. They are coming behind me. وَعَجِلْتُ إِلَيْكَ رَبِّ لِتَرْضَى. I rushed so that I make you happy. I make you pleased. Now he says, this is how Musa is treated in the Quran. He wants to please the Lord. And the status about Muhammad is the other way around. Allah always wants to please His Prophet. Here it says that لَسَوْفَ يُعْطِيكَ رَبُّكَ فَتَرْضَى. Your Lord will give you soon and you will become happy, please. And فَلَنُوَلِّيَنَّكَ قِبْلَةً تَرْضَاهَا. You wish another qibla, we will give you another qibla with which you will be pleased. He says, so there's a difference between the 2 Prophets. However, we know that these are different context, different attitudes. Just wanted to say how they have sometimes played with these words in their tafsir. Anyhow, let's talk about this. لَسَوْفَ يُعْطِيكَ رَبُّكَ فَتَرْضَى. Your Lord will soon give you so much that you will be pleased. Now, one very obvious meaning is that at the end of your mission, I will give you so much victory that you will be pleased. And this happened. The whole peninsula submitted to the Prophet. The Prophet defeated all the great powers in the peninsula. Even Ta'if, Saqif and Hawazin, who were the strongest, they came and submitted to the Prophet. So Allah gave him so much that he was pleased. If we take this with regards to his mission. The other one is about Akhira. Allah will give you so much that you will be pleased. So what is that? There's a beautiful hadith from Abdullah ibn Amr ibn al-As. You know, Amr ibn al-As, that we don't like him very much, because in Safin he cheated the delegation of Amir al-Mu'mineen. He had a son who was a scholar, Abdullah ibn Amr al-As. He says that, he reports a hadith. He says that 2 verses impressed Prophet peace be upon him very much, which were about the compassion of Prophets towards the Ummah. One is in Surah Ibrahim. when Abraham said, وَاجْنُبْنِي وَبَنِيَّ أَنْ نَعْبُدَ الْأَصْنَامَ. Keep me and my children away from worshipping idols. رَبِّ إِنَّهُنَّ أَضْلَلْنَ كَثِيرًا مِنَ النَّاسِ. These idols have made many people to slip. فَمَنْ تَبِعَنِي فَإِنَّهُ مِنِّي. Now I declare, anyone follows me, he is from my progeny. So I, when I ask about my progeny, when I ask about my children, I don't mean my biological children. I mean all human beings. فَمَنْ تَبِعَنِي فَإِنَّهُ مِنِّي. Whoever follows me is from me, he's like my child. وَمَنْ عَطَانِي. And whoever disobeys me and worships idols, what did he say? وَمَنْ عَطَانِي فَإِنَّكَ غَفُورٌ رَحِيمٌ. I don't ask you to punish them. I ask you to forgive them. Even though to disobey me and go and worship idols, I ask you to forgive me them because فَإِنَّكَ غَفُورٌ رَحِيمٌ. This is one instance. The other one is about Isa alayhi salam in Surah Ma'idah. When Isa is somehow taken into task and Allah questions. إِذْ قَالَ اللَّهُ يَا عِيسَى ابْنَ مَرْيَمَ أَأَنْتَ قُلْتَ لِلنَّاسِ اتَّخِذُونِي وَأُمِّيَ إِلَٰهَيْنِ مِنْ دُونِي. Did you tell these people to take you and your mother as gods? قَالَ سُبْحَانَكَ. He said, you are glorified. If I had told such, you would have known. I only told them what you told me. أَنْ اَبُدُ اللَّهِ, that you have to worship God. But they did what they did. However, again, Isa here says, أَنْ تُعَذِّبْهُمْ فَإِنَّهُمْ عِبَادُكَ. This is on the Day of Judgment. This is when Isa stands in the position of Shafa'ah for these Christians who believe in Trinity and these things. He says, أَنْ تُعَذِّبْهُمْ فَإِنَّهُمْ عِبَادُكَ. If you want to punish them, they are yours. عباد. They have no power. You could do whatever you wish with them. وَإِنْ تَغْفِرْ لَهُمْ. Of course, Isa don't say, Ya Allah, forgive them. No, Isa never speaks like that. He's standing before the Lord and he speaks with absolute politeness. أَنْ تُعَذِّبْهُمْ فَإِنَّهُمْ عِبَادُ. If you want to punish them, they are your عباد. You can do whatever. وَإِنْ تَغْفِرْ لَهُمْ. But if you forgive them, فَإِنَّكَ عَنْتَ الْعَزِيزُ الْحَكِيمُ. You are the most powerful. You are the most wise. You know what to do. But I don't tell you to forgive them. But if you do, I will please. So, this Abdullah ibn Amr al-As says that when the Prophet recited these two verses, he was impressed when these two were revealed to him. And he knew that what this Ummah is going to do. So, he said, Ya Rabbi, Allahumma ummati ummati. Now I want to ask you about my ummah. They talked about their ummah. Ibrahim talked in that way. Isa talked in that way. Now, Ya Rabbi, Allahumma ummati ummati, fabaka. And he started to cry. Yes. This ummah, I know what is going to happen to them, what they are going to do. They are going to kill Hussein ibn Ali, my grandson. They are going to do such and such and such. But I ask you about my ummah. فَقَالَ اللَّهُ عَزَّ وَجَلَّ يَا جِبْرَئِيلُ اذْهَبْ إِلَى مُحَمَّدٍ وَرَبُّكَ أَعْلَمُ. He said, Jibreel, go to Muhammad and ask him, although your Lord knows better, but there was a conversation going on. فَاسْأَلْهُ مَا يُبْكِيكَ. And ask him, why do you cry? فَأَتَاهُ جِبْرَئِيلُ فَسَأَلَهُ. Jibreel came and asked him, Ya Rasulallah, why do you cry? فَأَخْبَرَهُ. He informed Jibreel that. Now, Ibrahim asked, Isa asked about their nations, now I want to ask about my nation. فَقَالَ اللَّهُ عَزَّ وَجَلَّ يَا جِبْرَئِيلُ اذْهَبْ إِلَى مُحَمَّدٍ فَقُلْ إِنَّا سَنُرْضِيكَ فِي أُمَّتِكَ. Go to the Prophet and tell him, I will please you about your ummah. Now this is very interesting because then the Prophet said, I will not be pleased if one person of my ummah who believes in God would stay in hell. And that means no one of your ummah eventually will remain in hell. You bring them all out because you want to be happy. Now there are many other traditions in this regard that I will leave it inshallah for next week, because it's a very beautiful sort of conversation between God and the Prophet and the way he was feeling for his ummah. Inshallah we'll discuss this next week. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa ala sahbihi.
So the feelings that Prophet used to get, they show that he was having feelings like any other human, like any other person. And although we are sometimes told that Imam and the Prophets are aware of what is going around them, because of the Ibn al-Ghayb. So does this mean that he had no ghayb of our particular feeling, but then Allah informed him that, no, I haven't forsaken you. Am I on the right track of thinking or not?
You know, this Ibn al-Ghayb, because we have different verses in the Quran about it, it has confused people. We have one verse which says, قُلْ لَا يَعْلَمُ مَنْ فِي السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ الْغَيْبَ إِلَّا اللَّهِ. No one but Allah in the heavens and earth knows the ghayb. Neither Jibreel, nor Mikael, nor Muhammad, nor Musa, nor Isa alayhi salam, no. However, Allah would reveal this ghayb to the amount that he wishes, to anyone that he wishes. وَلَا يُحِيطُونَ بِشَيْءٍ مِّنْ عِلْمِهِ إِلَّا بِمَا شَاءَ. They will not encompass any of his knowledge unless to the amount that he wishes. Therefore, yes, the Prophet has ilm al-ghayb, the A'imma has ilm al-ghayb, but to the extent that Allah informed them. However, in other situations, they were like human beings. They had feeling, they had compassion, they had concern, they had worries. And if they didn't have all this worry, how did they cry to Allah to forgive them, to make the situation better than what it was? So I think we have to somehow discern between two things. One is having absolute awareness and ilm al-ghayb, they didn't have it. Second is having ilm al-ghayb to the extent that Allah revealed to them and wished them they know, yes they have.
So the Arab said, when I come to Adam or Raven, it said, first to Menach, on the 10 years. How comes that?
Yes, that means that in many instances, Allah did not reveal the future to the Prophet. So that means if I knew that what is going to happen next morning, I would have taken some measures, and therefore I had attracted all khayr to myself. That's the Prophet that I don't know ghayb. And the ghayb is revealed to him to the extent that he... For example, he wanted to make a treaty with Banu Nadir. On one instance, to get the help from them in a battle. Now, he didn't know that they are going to betray him. He went to them, and he was sitting beside the wall of their castle, waiting for his emissaries to go in and discuss things, and then they wanted to kill him by throwing the stone on his head. In that moment, Allah revealed to him that, Ya Rasulullah, they are planning to kill you, and Prophet left. So it was only in that moment that he was informed. Previously, he didn't know.
Sheikh, this word, Wada'aka, is it in connection with the word Buddha?
No, this is from wada'a, which means wada'a, to leave, not wad, which means love, no.
Alaykum salam. Sheikh, this opinion that people have that these two surahs, this one and the next one, are somehow linked, where does it come from? Because the Prophet would have said it, surely it would be very clear, either it is...
Yes, it comes from hadith. It comes from hadith.
But then, is it one surah or is it not? Because the point I'm making is, if it's one surah, then why is it two in the Quran? And if it's two surahs, why do you insist that we should read it as one?
No, it is two surahs, and it is counted as two, and therefore the number of the surahs in the Quran is 114 rather than 112 if these two couples of surahs were not regarded as two. However, the whole thing comes from A'imma alayhimu salam, that these two surahs in Salat are regarded as one because they have the same thing. Not in Quran. In Quran they are regarded as two, but in Salat they are regarded as one.
It sounds like a matter of precaution, but it's not precaution. It sounds as if we're doing it out of a precautionary act, in case they might...
No. It comes from A'im, that they have said that you have to recite them together. By the way, sorry, I have forgotten the name of the third tafsir, which is very, very important. That tafsir of Abu Futuh, Rawdul Janan, which is a very important tafsir in the 6th century. As I said, 6th century was a very good century for Shia tafsir. These three, Majmu' al-Bayan, Rawdul al-Janan, and Kashf al-Asrar, are really outstanding works in tafsir in the 6th century of Shia tafsir work.
Can you see also the last one?
Majmu' al-Bayan, Sheikh Tabrasi, who is usually called Tabarsi, but the right pronunciation is Tabrasi.
And you also wrote
that Abu al-Futuh al-Razi.
The same al-Razi or a different
one? You see, al-Razi means someone who comes from Ray. We have many, many Razis. So, like Qummi, for example, means someone who comes from Qum.
Can you relate this surah to a existing Imam Ibn Saman? In any way like that. And he is in Raiba, but obviously he's done some of our Quran as well, isn't he?
So, you mean that God has not forsaken Muslims, although the Imam is not here, but he's concerned about the Ummah, and Imam himself is concerned. Yeah, this is one of those type of understandings that I said maybody would have, a sort of connection or invocation of different meanings. But it's just a personal understanding. We cannot say this is tafsir, but it's a personal understanding from the surah or any verse.
Sorry. The Quran was revealed to the Holy Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam once in the Dalil al-Qadr completely, and then after that, peace by peace. So when the Mushrikun came to the Holy Prophet, one could he have said that because he already knew what was in the Quran, when it was revealed to him once?
No, that revelation was a sort of compact form. Zipped form. It should have been unzipped, and Prophet could not have unzipped him. It should have been unzipped by Jibreel gradually. So the details were not known to the Prophet. Thank you.